Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, and also KMAJ over in Topeka at 1440 AM. Thank you for being with us this morning, and thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning. This is the time, this is the place, Religion on the Line, where we have a conversation about the intersection between the divine and the human, and all that that entails. Give us a call at 576-7710, or if you're calling long distance, 913 or 816, then 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And Michael, we're hoping for another beautiful sunrise like we had last week. And I'll send you some pictures that will knock your socks off. Hopefully it is just as beautiful there in Chicago. But
I don't know. I'm deep in the bowels of my study, you know. at the moment, it is still dark out. But
right.
That said, what was the temperature yesterday in February in Kansas City?
I think it was in the mid-70s.
Yeah, it was really nice.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we're taking the notion of gorgeous and distorting it in terms of the long-term impacts of what this means for agriculture, what it means for quote-unquote pests, what it means for the environment in general and in the long term. This is scary stuff, guys.
May not be a good thing. I mean, we're not out of winter. We won't be out of winter, I guess, what, until Tuesday.
March 21.
A month from Tuesday. So this is...
Unless that groundhog was really wrong.
Yeah. So, Michael, what is on your mind this morning? What are you going to put on the fire for us to think about?
A few items that might be of possible interest to pick up. And, of course, as is tradition, more than likely, no one will bother. But that said, that wouldn't stop us, would it?
Right.
So here's one that I thought was kind of intriguing, especially, Bill, for you and me. This is out of the Pew Research Center. Feelings about Muslims in the United States have gone from cool to neutral. That's 8 points from their on their chart. Last time they did it was 2014. They have a so-called thermometer. Now here's where Jews and Catholics were regarded most positively. Nobody's regarded 100% positively, by the way, interestingly. And American feelings about almost all religious groups improved. Muslims and atheists remained at the bottom. But they were also the two groups who saw the highest boost in perception over the last 2 years, along with Hindus. Just, we measure everything, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure for a Muslim American or for a Muslim visiting America, they take very small comfort in such information. But I hope it says something about our moving toward a position of openness to the other, to the stranger, to that which is different. But here's a different matter altogether, and I'd be really delighted if there's somebody out there who can explain to me why this was necessary. Congress blocked a rule barring the mentally impaired from guns. The Senate and the House passed and sent on to the President for his signature a rule that would overturn an Obama regulation that would prevent some 75,000 people who are declared mentally disabled from purchasing guns.
I heard that and I was shocked. And
To me, it's a stunner.
It's almost negligence of duty. I can't understand it.
By the way, this rule came in place because Adam Lanza, who had a variety of impairments that put him under this challenge, there was no regulation that stopped him from purchasing guns. The guns that he used to kill the children and adults at Sandy Hook. But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would be grateful if someone in a calm manner, as opposed to how we usually go when we talk about gun control could give me some sense of what possible positive value was just attained for America. This one seems to me to be fraught with all kinds of possibilities, both positive and negative and awkward and problematic. The headline on this one is "Door Opens to Gene Editing in Embryos." The National Academies of Science and National Academy of Medicine recommended Tuesday in a long-awaited report that clinical trials involving the editing of genes in sperm, eggs, and early-stage embryos could be permitted under certain conditions. Once technical questions are resolved, clinical trials could start with extensive oversight, the report said. But the report urged limiting trials to the most, quote, the most compelling circumstances, such as that when no other treatment exists, the condition is very serious, and the gene in question are well known to cause a particular disease. Here's a technology clearly for a purpose that intends for good, but my goodness, it's a short hop to designer babies or
yeah.
super
yeah,
persons.
And somebody profiteering from that.
Yeah, that's among the things that truly scares me. And then we had the Washington Supreme Court ruled unanimously that a florist was not incorrect in stating that because of her religious objection, she would not provide flowers to a same-sex wedding. I'll just quote a small piece from the lengthy article. Stutzman is the Baronelle Stutzman, a florist in Richland, Washington. She was ordered to pay a $1,000 fine in 2013. Stutzman argued that she was exercising her First Amendment rights, but the court held that her floral arrangements do not constitute protected speech and that providing flowers to a same-sex wedding would not serve as an endorsement of same-sex marriage. This is quoting as from the court decision, I guess. As Stutzman acknowledged at deposition, providing flowers for a wedding between Muslims would not necessarily constitute an endorsement of Islam, nor would providing flowers for an atheist couple endorse atheism, the opinion said. In short, the challenge is, if I'm a provider of services commercially, do I have the right to say, I'll give you, I won't give you? And this court, presumably it's going to go further, at least that was what the article indicated, suggested unanimously that that's not speech. And that's not you're protecting your religious beliefs if you're in the commercial business. Anyway, that's my stuff.
All right. That's a good bit.
Locally, it's interesting. The Kansas Catholic Conference last year hosted a religious freedom rally in the Topeka Capitol, and they had over 1,000 people attend. And Baronelle Stutzman, she was one of the featured speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. She shared her story. It's been a while, but what was interesting is she, the person she denied services to, she was actually pretty good friends. Like she'd provided services to this gentleman in the past, and she confided him, I just don't feel comfortable in conscience. I mean, I just don't want to participate in that. And it, as I recall, this is just my memory now, but it was his mate that when he found out really pressed the issue. So it's. I know it's very difficult for that woman, and certainly we have to give prayers in that situation. But interesting to hear what our callers might say. But some of our listeners might remember she was the woman that came and spoke at the Religious Freedom Rally. So
576-7710 is the number to call. 576-7710 is the number to call. We're going to take a very brief break, and we're going to be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, Talk Radio, Religion on the Line. This is the time for you to pick up that phone and dial 816-576-7710. You can use 913. If you're local, it's just 576-7710. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City and Kansas. Along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
Michael, I've just got to suggest that the next time you're in town before March the 19th, hopefully that could be possible. But if not, then look for this coming to an area near you. We have been blessed at the Nelson Atkins museum with an exhibit called 40-Part Motet by Janet Cardiff. And this is not a visual experience, although there are things to see, such as 40 speakers arranged in a kind of ritualistic and also circular configuration. And it is a recording that lasts about 30 minutes, 15 minutes for the two parts. And it is Thomas Tallis' 16th century composition, Spem in Elium, sung by the Salisbury Cathedral Choir. And you can go sit or stand by the speakers and hear the individual voices, you know, doing their parts. You can pick up a piece of music and follow it along, by the way. Or you can just sit there, as I did, stupefied by the wonder and the glory and the awesomeness of the music. It's called 40-Part Motet, and it costs you $10 and 30 minutes of time. In addition to whatever you're going to do to get there. But it is a rare, rare experience that's available to us in the greater Kansas City area, and it'll be gone by March the 19th. It's been here since November 19th, and it's going to be gone by March 19th. I urge everybody, do not pass go. Do not stop to collect $200. Go to the Nelson Janet Cardiff's 40-Part Motet. It is a sacred experience. Even if you're not familiar with Latin, even if you're not Christian, even if you're not a religious adherent and loyal and involved in a community, you will be touched by something very, very gracious and holy in that place. So, have you ever heard about this, Michael, at all?
No.
It's been on a national tour, I think it was in MoMA. In New York, and it's just exquisite. If it comes to your place, I'll be interested. If it comes to Chicago, I'll be interested to see if you have a similar response. So, or you can see it here or hear it here. So, Bill, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I think oftentimes modern journalism, and this is actually nothing new, but there's a tendency to look at the church through sort of a dualistic view of conservative versus liberal, and certainly Pope Francis is prone to that. And a couple of things have been happening this month, and I'd be interested to hear if our listeners want to talk a little bit about it. But earlier this month, there was a bit of a scandal in Rome. I don't know if you heard about it, but somebody posted over 200 posters criticizing Pope Francis, saying where is your in a loose Italian, where is your mercy, Pope Francis, and listing off, you know, all these supposed things that Francis had done. And the cardinals that are part of his curial reform just came out with a reaffirmation of their stating their oath and their support of the Pope to make it clear that the cardinals of Rome support the Pope. But there's, you know, there's some strife sort of bubbling up, and so I'd be interested to hear. And I'm kind of concerned because just this morning there's something going around the internet saying that Pope Francis claims that Muslim terrorism does not exist, and he was giving a speech to the world movement of popular movements or something along those lines, and during the speech he got a bit impassioned and he said, There's no such thing as Jewish terrorism. There's no such thing as Christian terrorism. There's no such thing as Muslim terrorism. It does not exist. And really what the Pope meant was that
terrorism is terrorism
and it does not, it's not a legitimate expression of any of these religions. So it'll be interesting to see. I just wanted to see if our listeners had caught that, and if they had any thoughts and they wanted to talk about that. 816-576-7710. Always good to maybe step back and go, okay, well, what was the meaning behind that? And what is the Pope really trying to say?
I immediately went there, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm glad for your caution and glad for your correction of any kind of shallow understanding of what the Pope was saying. But I saw that and I said, oh, he meant terrorism is terrorism is terrorism, yeah. Period. And it's not of the essence of that religion. Yeah.
Lent's going to be coming up pretty soon. It's about a week and a half away. And in the Christian tradition, many Christians, they commit to fasting or giving up certain types of luxuries as a form of penance. Many Christians also add Lenten spiritual disciplines, such as reading a daily devotion or praying through a Lenten calendar. It's a time to draw yourself nearer to God. And I understand the tradition comes in the ancient church. Catechumens, people who were going to join the church at the Easter Vigil, were required to do a form of penance during the 40 days before, and that at a certain point, other Christians decided, well, hey, let's be in solidarity with these guys. Let's also take up a form of penance. So I'd love to hear from our listeners, what are you planning on doing for Lent? Let's share some great, what is a custom you do during Lent that you think other Christians might benefit from? Do you give up alcohol, or do you give up salt or sweets, or is there a special prayer or reading that you do? We'd love to hear from you. And I'd like to just suggest, if you're a man, there is a great Lenten retreat. It happens every year. This is the 21st time. It's Men Under Construction. It's a great men's retreat. And if you're a guy and you're looking for a way to kickstart your Lent, it's a great way to get started. Monsignor Stuart Sweatland's one of the keynote speakers, and that's going to be happening. It's always the first Saturday after Ash Wednesday, so March 4th. That's Men Under Construction. It's a great way, and it's a great thing to bring your son to as well. Oftentimes, I like bringing my sons, and it's a time of male fellowship, but also a time to just kind of get rebooted in time for Lent. So that's what I've got.
All righty. Let's go to some callers that have called in right away. Scott, you've got religion on the line. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I wanted to talk about, and just briefly, about several of your subjects and just in passing, but I appreciate what the Pope said in the 70s when the Irish Republican Army bombed somebody. It was the Irish Republican Army. It wasn't Irish, and it wasn't Catholics that did it. It was the IRA. And that should be clear. It does concern me that with the internet that we have now, you're seeing a plethora of some pretty barbaric acts all around the world in Islamic countries. And I'm kind of concerned that that's going to further more anti-Islamic angst against Islamic people. Most Islamic people that I've ever worked with, they want to do their work. They are good workers, and they just want to raise their families and practice their religion in peace and be that and that alone. When I was in college, however, I went, and we had a lot of Iranian students. I went to, I don't know what it was called, but it was a patriotic Iranian meeting, and they showed films, and it was during the Iran-Iraq War. And I'll tell you, it was a little scary. I saw anti-American propaganda. I saw fervor for the Ayatollah Khomeini. And I saw a lot of war footage that was spooky, how the people reacted. It was very much like Nazi Germany.
Scott, hold on. I
want these people out of this country.
Yeah, Scott, can you hold on? We got to take a break.
Sure.
Hold on. We're going to be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got religion on the line. Here we are at KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. And welcome to the big talker in Topeka, KMAJ, 1440 AM, that is now syndicated over there. During this time frame, every Sunday, we welcome you all from Topeka. We're glad that you're part of the listening audience. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And we've been talking with Scott. So, Scott, you said there were several things you wanted to get to.
Yeah. Now, first of all, what I just said before, I do not want people to think that I was anti-Iranian. I had very good friends at that time at the college who were Iranian, but they were anti-Shah, or they were anti-Khomeini. They were westernized and very close friends of mine, but they were not for the Shah, the Ayatollah Khomeini. After I saw what I saw in that rally, I thought, my gosh, these people are crazy. And it was very much like what I saw at the Nuremberg or other kind of rallies by the Nazis.
I'm confused. They were anti-Shah or anti-Khomeini?
Well, no. Let me discern. And here's where we have problems. How do people discern and disseminate? Back then, what I saw were pro. When I went to the rally, I saw pro Ayatollah Khomeini, anti-American, anti. Capitalism,
okay.
They had that propaganda up on their films. I said that I was not against all Iranians. I had very good friends. A young woman I went to school with, Shala, and her brother Mohammed and her husband Wally. It was short for something else.
Okay.
But they were Iranians. They were against the Ayatollah Khomeini. Now, I just wanted to make sure that you understood that I was not bigoted.
I wasn't saying that at all. I thought you were saying they were anti-Khomeini and they were spewing all this anti-American stuff. And
No. I think that's there may have been some confusion. I was trying to clarify was not bigoted towards Iranians. What was really concerning to me was this anti-American rhetoric, and I also put some things together. You know, I looked around, I saw all these Iranians, it's mostly men who go to the school. They're studying sciences and physics, and they're not studying art or law or teaching. They're studying physics and computer science and engineering at all forms and architecture. What can you do with all that? Well, you can build a nuclear weapons program. Oh, that. And now I was thinking several decades ahead of the game. I really wanted these men and their families gone, but not Shala and her husband and her brother Mohammed.
So Scott, basically what you're saying is you had some personal experience with pro Ayatollah Khomeini forces. You met them, and they kind of
Ayatollah Khomeini forces.
Oh, and both, but that the sort of the and that was a movement back in the 70s, where the Shah was kicked out, and they reinstituted theocratic state.
Reinstituted is correct, but they instituted one.
Yeah, instituted one. Yeah.
So, you know what you're saying, Scott, makes me think of a saying that the perversion of the best is the worst. So the greater the dignity of the thing when it's perverted, it's worse, it's terrible, and religion in itself is a very good thing, and it's meant to bring us closer to God, and then coming closer to God, have a greater love. It's supposed to bring us closer to all of humanity and our neighbors. But when you take it and you twist it and say, well, you know, God wants you to kill this person, or God wants you to do this in a way that goes against charity, then it becomes a very destructive force.
Despising or being suspicious of your neighbors.
But it can create
who are
this,
different from you.
Yeah, but then it can create this cycle of, it can create this cycle of destruction where people are pushing against the evil that they're seeing, but they blame religion for it. And I think that's what the Pope's trying to say is this.
Yeah,
it's not religion.
And I agree with the Pope.
Yeah, it's not religion that's making them. They're claiming that religion is their motivation, but it's actually something quite different.
It's a very profound
statement
on the part of the Pope.
And I'd like to just jump to another subject you brought up about the I didn't know about the bill where they're going to undo Obama's thing about
mentally disabled folks being able to purchase guns.
But what was the range of that definition of mentally disabled? Because there was angst in the gun community that somebody who may have had depression at one time,
no.
It would come up. Well, you're on the no gun allowed list, or you have PTSD, or you might be, or something on the Affordable Care Act. Some doctor thought that you may have some kind of mental condition.
You want to hear?
Michael, he can't hear you, okay? And Scott, you can't hear Michael trying to give you the definition, okay? And he will give it to you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It affects an estimated 75,000 people with mental disorders from being able to purchase firearms. It was crafted as part of Obama's effort to strengthen the federal background check system in the wake of the 2012 massacre of 20 students at Sandy Hook. Because, and it's specifically Adam Lanza, and it lists some of his issues. As I understand it, it's the persons who are impacted, and it's approximately 75,000 people, are people who are under a guardianship in terms of Social Security disability, and someone else handles their affairs in every other aspect, save this, I guess, that you can now purchase a gun.
Yeah, I'm reading, if you qualify for Social Security disability insurance because of a mental illness that keeps you from working and you cannot manage your benefits, then you'd be barred from buying a gun.
If I'm not hearing everybody, there was some angst that maybe somebody who could hold a job or something like that, or had some kind of mental condition, maybe a veteran, could not purchase a firearm for self-protection. And you're slicing
Scott,
and dicing here.
Scott, these are people who are not responsible for themselves.
Yeah, and I get that,
And so what Michael's question and mine would be, too, is how in the world is this a good thing that they now, in all other aspects of their lives, they have to turn to somebody else who gives approval for their care and their lives and oversees them.
Yeah.
But here, on a gun, they have access and can go purchase a weapon. How is that a good thing?
Yeah, and that's spooky, and especially if they can be, purchase a weapon and somebody else, it falls into somebody else's hand because they're not responsible for themselves. They're not going to be responsible.
Yeah, there's all kinds of bad all over this, I think.
But there was serious, once again, I think this is where it's crazy, on one hand, I do agree that I was not for Obama. I mean, I'm a libertarian, and I didn't care for what Obama stood for, and I felt that his anti-feelings towards the Second Amendment and the Affordable Care Act, which I was not for either. Fortunately, I have insurance through my company, but there was a big fear in the gun community about a kind of a anti-Second Amendment mission creep by the Obama administration, which would be extirpated by Clinton administration, the second one.
Exacerbated.
And,
but I don't...
Exacerbated,
yeah,
yes.
We've got to take a break, and we're going to bid you adieu here, but I think from my perspective, I'll speak only for myself, why does it have to be open season? Anybody can have a gun, including the mentally unstable. How is that protecting everybody else's rights?
Or especially if somebody who is a gun wants to buy a gun has somebody in their household who is mentally unstable. That bothers me, and that was the situation in Sandy Hook.
Yeah. So, at any rate, we're going to have to bid you adieu. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Scott.
And we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back after these messages. Good morning. You've got religion on the line here at KCMO Radio, Talk Radio 710 AM, 103.7 FM. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your Sunday morning. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
And, Michael, we've got, I think what we have a little problem sometimes when you're, and I'm going to try to listen very carefully, and if a caller doesn't hear you, I'm going to interject very quickly to say Michael has a comment or something like that.
Okay.
Because they just
I'll raise my hand.
Or you can raise the volume a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to go to Brad. Brad, you've got religion on the line.
I'm glad I hear Mr. Michael Zedek because he's who I want to address. He's kind of become my favorite Sunday morning contrarian. This concern about senior citizens and gun control.
Say that again?
This concern about senior citizens and gun control?
No, it wasn't senior citizens. It was mentally ill people who were under guardianship.
Actually, you're wrong. It is a matter of senior citizens. If you go to the National Rifle Association and read the actual bill, what it is that if somebody is given guardianship over their financial matters, they are considered, quote-unquote, mentally disabled, like you said, and disabled from buying a gun, which I find completely wrong. My father was 70 years old, and yeah, he had a hard time maintaining his checkbook. But when three black men broke into his house, one started hitting his wife. He had no problem getting three shots off and protecting him and his wife from probably death.
You may be quoting some source that I sure as heck don't have, because this says
that
75,000 people
the actual
with mental disorders.
Verbatim.
And Adam Lanza, who was 20 years old when he shot those people, assuming one believes he did shoot those people, was in no fashion a senior citizen. The article makes no mention of that. That's intriguing. But if someone is, in fact, under circumstances where there's a custodian for their affairs,
for their financial affairs,
I find it.
This isn't just, by the way, Brad, this isn't just about financial affairs. You're emphasizing that because that's what's on the NRA website. Michael is talking about some other things that the bill includes.
Okay. Have you read the bill?
Michael has. Michael has.
I've read the news article. Have you read the bill?
A liberal commentator slant on it. Michael must not have read the bill, because if he has...
This is from the Wall Street Journal. It's not a liberal commentator slant on it, and it doesn't take any position on it. It states the facts. I then added, I do not understand how anyone could suggest that this makes anyone safer.
Are your parents alive?
My parents are not alive.
My parents are.
Okay, for whoever's
I just lost
alive.
My mother, thank you very much. So yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So she must be, in her 80s or something?
No, she's 104. She passed away recently.
Okay, well, if any of you happen to have a parent that happens to be maybe in their 80s, who might be a little slow on doing their own checkbook, a little slow on doing their own
Can this person drive a car?
Can this person drive a car? Not necessarily. They might have vision problems, or they might have motor skill problems.
Do they have mental health problems?
That's what the bill does not address. It does not address.
That's what the bill. That's what
problems.
The article says it does. But in the so
you know, we'll
you, would put, you would put
and...
no restriction whatsoever on the purchase of guns at all. Am I correct in that, or is there any restriction that is appropriate in terms of any person who should not have access to a firearm?
If a person has Alzheimer's, I can certainly understand they're not having a gun. Obviously.
What if they were declared mentally unstable?
By mentally unstable, that's the balancing act, right?
Like
there.
Schizophrenic and bipolar.
I probably wouldn't want it there either.
Or if they were on a no-fly,
memory is not 100%. It's just an old person whose memory is not 100%. That
we're talking unless the article is lying. We're talking about approximately 75,000 people whose affairs are taken care of by someone else,
and that's
in all matters that matter before the law.
That's the primary criteria.
That's what the article says. Now, we'll agree to disagree. I find this incomprehensible.
But
that's not surprising. I find lots of things incomprehensible.
The other thing I was going to say is that did I hear you mention you're going to come to Kansas City?
From time to time, he comes.
If you ever come to Kansas City, I own a home in Martin City. It's all done out in 1800s antiques, and you couldn't be any more welcome than to come stay here. I'd probably love to have
you. Well, I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the invitation. But we have a lot of family in Kansas City, which is why we're there with some regularity. So, and I used to work there for 26 years.
Well, let's hope
but that thank you for the invitation.
Any of your family are of the age to be affected by this law, that they can still protect themselves. Okay. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
Well, hey, Brad, I know Brad just left, but I'm looking at an article on USA Today, and it claims that at the urging of the National Rifle Association, a rule requiring the Social Security Administration to send records of such individuals, these are the mentally ill who are on disability, to the federal background system for firearms is among the host of regulations the group says is being targeted by the Republican Congress. So it sounds like the National Rifle Association itself is in actually support of this regulation, saying if you're collecting
disability. The National Rifle Association is against the regulation.
Okay. They're against the they're against any regulation at all.
All right.
Period.
All right. Maybe I'm misreading it. Okay.
There was a strange bedfellow a little later in the article. Lawmakers with the backing of the National Rifle Association, and here's interesting, and advocacy groups for the disabled oppose the regulation.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to go to Tracy. Tracy, you've got religion on the line real quick. Tracy?
Yes, thank you very much. Listen, many years I've listened to your show and really enjoyed it. This is the first time I've been able to call in.
Wonderful.
Welcome.
Thank you. I've got an issue with the Kansas City St. Joseph Diocese. But before I get into this, I would like to ask Michael, because I don't get to listen all the time. I'm going to go back in time, and your daughter was married. You were talking about the father-daughter dance. What was the song?
I actually talked about this?
Yeah, you did, Mike. I remember that.
Wow.
I never found out what the song was. And maybe you never said that. You were talking about going, the wedding was coming up. You know, we're going to dance with, your daughter.
Right.
And you weren't sure what the song was going to be. I was just curious what the song was. And if you
I hate to say this. And I'm
that's okay.
I hope your daughter's not listening.
Was
you're going to get in so
Michael,
much trouble.
Michael, was it What a Wonderful World?
Well, I'll take your word for it. I like that song.
that'll preach.
Okay.
But now I got a small problem because I promised to do research on this. Are we talking research
Tracy, can you hear Michael?
He's breaking up.
You know
he's
what? We're going to have to put you on hold and come back to you after the break. We got to take a hard
on,
break.
Tracy?
Can you hold on?
Absolutely.
Okay,
hold on.
We're going to be right back after paying some bills, listening to some news, and checking things out. You check us out at 576-7710.